Welcome to Multilingual Montessori, a podcast where we discuss multilingualism, multiculturalism, and raising children from a Montessori perspective. I'm Gabrielle Kutkov, an AMI Montessori guide and TESOL instructor with a master's in child studies, and I'm the founder of Multilingual Montessori. You can find me on Instagram at multilingual.montessori and at multilingualmontessori.org. My conversation today is with Nicole Holtbluer, a mom and Montessorian with over two decades of experience working with young children. Nicole currently lives and works as a Montessori toddler guide at Hala Kahiki Montessori School on the island of Lanai, part of the Hawaiian archipelago, with her husband and their three-year-old daughter and seven-year-old dog. You may know Nicole as Radical Beginnings on Instagram, where she shares lots of information and inspiration about supporting babies and toddlers using Montessori principles. Nicole is a hopeful enthusiast who believes when young children are respected and understood by the adults who surround them, they have the power to change the course of our world. We recorded this conversation back in February, and we covered lots of topics about toddlers, multilingualism, and moving halfway around the world for Montessori. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Nicole.
Hello, I am so happy to be here and honored too. So my name is Nicole Holtbluer. I always like to pronounce my last name because I know it's kind of a doozy for folks. So Holtbluer is the way that you pronounce it. It's Dutch, actually. And I am currently living I'm trying to figure out what the right language is. I'm living on the island of Lanai, which is in Hawaii. It is one of the smallest islands of the eight that people reside on. It's right next to Maui. And I've been here for just over 6 months. And prior to that, I spent my entire life in Colorado, both in the city in Denver and also in the foothills and mountains of the state. So it's been quite the change of scenery to have moved here. Still beautiful. I grew up somewhere beautiful and now I'm living somewhere beautiful, which is, I think, part of my requirement for existence on this planet at this point. And I live here with my husband. We've been married for, oh my gosh, we've been together for over 10 years. Can't remember how long we've been married for. And our almost three-year-old daughter, which is blowing me away that we're at the end of that first subplane of the absorbent mind, that unconscious absorbent mind phase. I'm seeing her shift into the conscious, and it is so cool, making me sad a little bit because I'm like, oh my gosh, I know 0 to 3 and she's almost out of my expertise age. So I'm like already starting to like look towards, you know, friends that are experts in the 3 to 6 age group. So yeah, we live here with our dog Kona, who I think was meant to come to Hawaii at some point in his life with the name Kona. We didn't name him. He came with the name Kona and we kept it. So I love that he's here with us too.
Oh, I love that. I can't believe your daughter's almost three. I remember you posting about your pregnancy.
I know, it's blowing me away. And when I do like home visits or parent orientations for new families in my classes, I always say this goes really fast. And I knew that as a teacher. Now as a parent, it goes even faster. It boggles my mind how quickly time is going. And I'm finding myself in a position with her where I'm just savoring every moment, which feels really good as a parent to not be kind of wishing time away. I felt that way sometimes when she was a newborn, where I was like, oh my gosh, this is kind of hard. And not that it isn't still hard. She's in a real sweet spot, and especially with language, which has been just so cool to see my own child go through the acquisition of language and learning how to communicate.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, we're going to talk all about parenting and Hawaii, but I wanted to start by asking you about your Montessori journey. So how did you first find out about Montessori and what brought you into this world?
Oh, I love Montessori stories. I think it's one of the most like interesting thing to ask others because everyone has such unique, interesting stories. So I never really did well in school. Like I barely passed high school. I just really struggled with connecting to the materials or the content. And I was waiting tables at the Olive Garden. I had failed out of college. I was living with my parents in their basement and very good at soup, salad, or breadsticks, which is and my mom, I was talking to her and I was like, I'm just so unhappy doing this. I know there's something for me out there. And she was like, you were the babysitter. Like, I babysat for all the kids on my street. I nannied all throughout high school, like in the summers, that was my job. And I was like, why don't you just call some like daycare places and see if you get a job? So I went to the phone book, which totally dates me. Instead of Googling childcare, I looked at a phone book. I called a few places, and the first place to call me back was a Montessori school.
Wow.
And went in, observed in the classroom, and this was in 2001. So went in, observed in the classroom, thought, okay, I can do this. And on the first day, I was like, oh my gosh, what did I get myself into? Because it was in a toddler class. It was in a really traditional, the school that I started at had been opened by a Montessori trainer, by Judy Orion. It wasn't run by her at the time, but anyway, so it was really kind of traditional 12 months old to 36 month old environment. And in that time, children could, we could have irons for the kids, like on a low setting. So I was like watching children iron, and there was a child snapping asparagus and like all this work that I was like, this is amazing and a lot. And so the first day I was like, I don't know, do I really want to do this? And on day two, I really bonded with a student. Like, we just had that connection, those moments that you get with children that are so yummy and amazing, and you see their potential. And it was like from that day on, and I'll never forget that student, Nevada was his name. And from that moment on, it was like, this is my world. This is totally my world. And I ended up going to get my AMI assistance to infancy diploma in Colorado in Denver, which I lucked out because one of the best training centers in the world just happened to be, 10 minutes from where I was already living. When I took the Montessori training in Denver, I was one of the only people from Colorado in my course. Most of the people came in from other states or other countries, which was really cool to have such a diverse group of individuals. You'll love this, is for birthday celebrations at the Montessori Institute. Everyone joins together and they sing happy birthday in every single language that's part of the training. So as a summer birthday, I loved that because you never got, my birthday was never celebrated in school. And so I had happy birthday sung to me in like Mandarin, Japanese, Spanish. There was a woman from Serbia. There was a woman from the Philippines. It was just like, I think I got happy birthday sung to me in like 10 different languages. It was such a special, cool moment. And then after I graduated from the Montessori Institute, I took a little time. I didn't go right into the classroom. I nannied some more and kind of sowed some wild oats, and eventually found myself working and teaching and growing. And training is amazing and you learn so much, but it's really the hands-on experience that is where I think a lot of the magic happens. Combined with when I was an assistant starting off in that first program, I had a really phenomenal lead teacher who I was able to learn a great deal from. So some of the stuff that I still do now, what is it, 22, 23 years later, I learned from that first teacher, which wherever she is in the world, we weren't able to stay t in touch because it was like before social media and like, just close. She was Australian. Hi, Megan. If for some reason this comes into your world, right? You never know.
You
Montessori
never
is so
know.
small. Right. So I taught for years and years, and then started to do more like public speaking. I was invited by David Kahn from NAMTA to speak at a conference. That's kind of how I got my first opportunity to speak and be paid for it and have an audience, a wider audience. And I loved it. And so from there, I've been able to speak at the last year, I spoke at the AMI refresher course, and I've spoken at the AMS conference a couple times and done, regional conferences and hosted my own Zoom. And I was mentoring for a while, and this was all through Radical Beginnings, which is the little like kind of, I say company, but it doesn't feel like a company. Like it's just like it's me. I guess I don't know how I want to put it. And I feel differently about it now that I'm back in the classroom. It was a way to continue my practice outside of the class when I really needed to take a pause from teaching and focus on other things. So Radical Beginnings was born, and it's still, I just did a workshop the other day for a former client. So my focus now is really on the community and children and families that I'm serving and working with and in community with here on Lanai.
Yeah.
Ah, yeah.
So, how long was the break that you took from the classroom, and what was it like going back into the classroom after that?
So it was actually an opportunity arose. It in 2016, I stepped away from the classroom, and part of it was I was commuting over about like 45 minutes to an hour every day. And you know, when you tap that onto an 8 hour day, it's you know 10 hours that you're away from home, which felt like a lot. So it was a nice opportunity. I'd moved from the city to the mountains, and I remember I left teaching in like May, and when everyone started to go back to school in August, the FOMO was so real, like everyone preparing their environments and getting excited. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm alone. Like I've spent my whole career with children and other adults, and now I'm by myself. And there was a learning curve there. And it's definitely different when you aren't getting a paycheck every 2 weeks and you have to hustle for everything. And it changes. I mean, being an entrepreneur is so different from being a classroom teacher. So it was good. I enjoyed it. I also really thrive on routine. So I had the opportunity in 2018 to start a just 3 hour a day toddler environment in the little mountain town Evergreen where I was living. So at the Montessori School of Evergreen, they already had one toddler program at one of their campuses. They wanted to open another one at their campus that was on the other side of town. And I got the opportunity to do that, which was really cool to be able to open a class from scratch and only have children for 3 hours a day. So they arrived at 8, they left at 11. They did a community lunch with me, or a community snack, sorry, a community snack, and then they left and ate lunch at home. And it was a community where this worked, right? Not everyone can only do 3 hours a day. Some of the families had nannies that would pick up. Some of the families worked from home themselves, so they'd pick up, eat lunch, their child would nap, and then they could keep working. So it was nice because I was there from 8 to 11. Well, really, I was there from 7 to 12, you know, because all that prep time. And the afternoons then allowed me to continue Radical Beginnings. So I sort of had the best of both worlds during that time and really enjoyed it, loved the school. And COVID hit. And that changed everything for a lot of people. And so I worked that last phase of COVID, or that first phase of COVID, the end of the school year from it's like March to May, did the virtual learning, which with a group of 2-year-olds is very fascinating. A lot of times I would just have blank screens and just like trust that they're still hearing my voice. And it was nice to connect and get creative. But I decided not to return to the classroom. After that, I was going through IVF at the time to get pregnant with Edie, and the risk was too high. So I returned back to doing just Radical Beginnings, which during COVID worked out well because everyone was doing online and everyone was really comfortable then, you know, getting really used to learning that way. So I was able to just keep doing what I was doing for the most part while getting pregnant and being home during COVID while I was pregnant. And it was last year at this time where I met the now head of school here at the refresher course in, where were we last year? In Boston? Was it Boston last year? Baltimore. We were in Baltimore, I think.
Yeah,
It was
Boston was
one of the
AMS.
Okay, yes. Okay. Ba we were in Baltimore. And I was saying, I was quietly starting to look for something. I knew I wanted to get back into some form of teaching. And I also have always really wanted and dreamed of working at the school that my child goes to. So I was sort of quietly looking. I had called a couple schools in Denver and said, "Hey, do you have any program coordinator or are there any kind of more office jobs?" I wasn't really looking to get into the classroom. And then this opportunity arose. I met the now head of school at the refresher course in the little meet and greet thing that they always do. And she and I were talking, and she was like, "Yeah, we're looking for a toddler teacher." And the night before, I had told my friend that I was with. I was like, "We're just ready for an adventure. Like, we could do anything right now." And she's like, "Yeah, we need a toddler teacher." And I was like, "I think I might know someone." And I texted my husband that night, just Hawaii question mark, because when I'm at the refresher course, he knows like I'm talking to people and meeting people. Like, he knew what that meant. And he was like, "Yes." And so I filled out an application, and now I'm here sitting on this amazing little island in the middle of the Pacific. It's been a
Wow.
really, really cool journey. Montessori has been such a gift to me in my life, and how it's, helped me. Just my career has been more than just a job to me, and I feel so, so grateful to have that, because I know that that's unique in the society that we live in. My assistant and I were just talking the other day about how much we love being here. We were both like, I think I love it here. I really love spending my days here. There's nothing else I would want to be doing work-wise than being here." So it's been a really beautiful journey.
Ah, that's so special. And one thing I forgot to say before when you were talking about how small the Montessori world is, I may have told you this before, that my first boss when I was an assistant in a Montessori school went to training with you, Siri, who was a guest on this podcast. I'll have to look up what episode that
I didn't
was.
realize Siri was on here. Oh my gosh,
Yeah.
that's right. I couldn't remember what our connection was in this small world of.
Yeah.
So
Isn't that wild?
Siri was who I was talking to at dinner about how I was ready for an adventure, and she was who was with me when I met the head of school here
Wow.
to apply for it. And she was the one that was like, "Do it, do it." And she had just moved across, she had moved from New
That's
York to
right.
the Bay Area. And so she was like, all like, "Yeah, it's awesome. Go for
Yeah.
it."
Oh,
I
that's
love
so
that we
funny.
have the Siri connection. She is so
Yes.
wonderful.
Yes, she is. She taught me so much about Montessori. I mean, I started out kind of the same thing, that I was looking for something different and knew I liked working with children. And I just randomly applied for an assistant position at a Montessori school. And then I worked 1 year in the toddler class and 1 year in the primary class. And yes, she taught me so much about Montessori. She like steered me toward which training program to go to. So she's wonderful. Yeah, I love
Yay,
that connection as
Siri.
well. Yeah. And I also feel like Montessori has taken me to such amazing places and introduced me to such amazing people. So it's great.
I totally agree with that. I tell my dad a lot. So for years, I paid my own way to go to the refresher course every year, because it's important. And being a 0 to 3 educator, you're often alone in schools or with programs, not all the time, but that being able to be around other people that understand the joys of it and understand the challenges of it and understand the language, so I can say, I could talk about the human tendencies without having to explain what the human tendencies are first, is so, so nice. But my dad would give me, as like a Christmas present, it would be he would help me get to wherever the refresher course was that year. And I used to tell him, I love going to these two because it's all about collaboration. We're not there to compete with one another. Like, we're there to get inspired. We're there to support each other. We're there to celebrate each other. And how many people have that opportunity in their lives and in their careers to sit amongst, 2,000 plus people and think like, we all have this love for the child and for then entering the world is gives me goosebumps. It's
Yeah.
really cool.
Yeah. I remember being at the AMS conference last year. I didn't go to AMI last year, but it was my first AMS. So the conferences, just for context, the AMI conferences were much, much bigger than the AMI ones. So it was my first time being at a conference that big, I think. And I remember sitting in this auditorium for like the keynote speech, probably 5,000 people there. I think that's, or maybe not in the auditorium, but that was the number that they were saying had registered. And I remember feeling like, wow, all of these people either lead a school or have their own classroom of 15 to 30 children. Like the impact, I remember thinking about the impact that the people in this room have and the reach it felt like I was part of like a Montessori movement. It was very exciting.
Like if you think of everyone like having branches, and all the branches are like the different families or different children or different just people that they've impacted by their work. If you think about how that branches off and the branches off from there, it helps when I feel frustrated with the state of the world. I'm like, oh yeah, but there are like-minded folks that are
Yeah.
wanting and knowing that humans are capable of so much more.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember telling friends about this conference, and somebody said, wow, there are 5,000 people who are Montessori teachers. And I was like, there sure are.
Even more, I went to the Congress in 2013 when it was in Portland, and that was cool to see folks from all over the world. Like that's another major goal,
Yeah.
it's to go to another Congress but go when it's not in the States. I think it's in Mexico
It's
this
in
year, which
Mexico next year. That
feels
feels
maybe more
doable.
doable.
I almost went to the one in Prague because I was doing my training in London, and it was that following summer. But then I got a job in Austin and in Texas in the South. The school year starts in August, so the timing didn't work out. And all my friends from training went. It was very sad. And then I was like, oh, it's okay, I'll go to Thailand, which of course I didn't. But it's
I know.
a little too far on my own dime, you know.
I
But maybe
know. I
Mexico.
know. I know. I feel like Mexico is a little more doable.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk a little about parenting. So you told me a little bit about what the transition from being a Montessori teacher to Montessori parent was like, but tell me a little more about if there has been anything that has surprised you, since you worked with infants and toddlers for so long before becoming a parent, what has that experience been like?
It never ceases to amaze me that despite all my training and all my experience with children and families, that I'm still so confused so much of the time about what I am doing. It's true, we're children. I feel like my daughter's a step or two ahead of me all the time, you know, and I'm kind of trying to play catch up with what she's doing and how she's growing and how rapid it is. And I'm so grateful to have had all this knowledge and experience to be able to be the kind of parent that I am to her, because there's so much that does make sense to me that's happening in her brain that I see friends and, you know, clients, meaning, you know, families that I serve, I see it not clicking for them, not because they're, you know, they don't, it's just because they don't know. That's the whole piece, is they don't know. When she's putting up a fight to me, or a fight, or you know, if we're kind of lurking into power struggle, you know, areas, I know what to do and I know how to handle those in a way where my child's never had a full on tantrum to where it is like, you know, an hour plus of just, you know, a mess, feed absolutely a mess. And I think that's a testament to this philosophy and being able to prepare the environment for my child, being able to prepare myself, and understanding that, you know, what I say in my head all the time of you can change the environment, not the child. Like my child is who she is. I get to guide her. And when things are not working, I have to look to the environment, and the environment is also myself. So I do a lot of like walking away, or I do a lot of like, why am I forcing you to do this when you're telling me no? Why am I forcing you? You know, are you ready for what I'm asking of you? I'm able to kind of reflect on some of those things and think like, oh, yeah, that's on me. That's my issue that I need to work on. And I've always known that in the environment and in the, you know, working with other people's children, it's different when it's with your child. The other day, she and I yelled at each other, and then we both cried about it. We both slammed the door too. Like, you know, things that would never happen in the classroom is so interesting to see at home. So during her infant years, because I've primarily spent my career with children walking and older, it was really, really fun to set up the environment and to use all these materials that I've had. You know, either stashed away from training, like the Topolino that I used for Edie, which, if you don't know what a Topolino is, it's a little pillow that the baby lies on that makes it really easy to not only hold them, but also pass them around to other people. And it keeps your smell close to them, which adds safety and comfort. So, you know, I'd made my Topolino in training and carted it around for like 19 years from house to house. And finally, I'm using it with my child, setting up mobiles and seeing how she would engage with them. And so then, you know, just moving towards, you know, work of the hand. And it was so cool to use the materials and go through my albums and like link them up and feel like a scientist and a mom at the same time. And you know, then there's like the care part, the sleeping, you know, where I'm like, I have no idea. I remember the first night we got home from the hospital, my husband and I were like, what do we do? Does she just go to sleep? What's next? Right? Because no one tells you because they can't, because you're learning together. You're creating a map of your family together in the moment. And that was very eye-opening for me. Not just then, but this whole experience of being a mom, being a parent. And, you know, as she got closer to the toddler years, it was that excitement of, you know, setting it up for independence and making sure she's an included member of the home, making sure that she has a cabinet that has, you know, tools for the kitchen that she can access, or somewhere for her to get snack, or whatever, you know, we can kind of think of to make it so that she feels included and like she can contribute. So that's been really fun. What I feel like has been the biggest, like, aha moments, because it's not just one moment, it's a series of them, is how different I feel as a teacher in the classroom now being a parent. And before I had children, I remember parents over the years saying to me, just wait till you have kids, which is by far one of the worst things you can say to someone, especially someone who's dealing with fertility problems. And it's true.
Yes, people
That's
have
the
said
hard
that
part.
to me as well. I remember so clearly and me being very indignant, but I'm sure that it is true.
It really changes. And for me, it's changed me in the way of, I used to think that I could change parents. Like I had this kind of, I just had this idea of like, if I can just change parents so that they can do this with their child. And I've come to really understand, and I think I was starting to grasp this, you know, just in age and wisdom, but it really, really clicked in now being a parent myself, is like, it's my job to meet parents where they are and to amplify what they're doing. It's my job to build parents up. And I think for a lot of times in my career, I had families that were scared of my judgment. I think a lot of parents are scared of their teachers' judgments and keep things hidden, or you know, just don't feel safe or trusting with them based on how kind of powerful we are with the children, because we know so much that, you know, I had one family years later say, you know, we lied to you. We didn't get rid of their pacifier. We just said we did because we just. And to me, I'm like, God, that's like the opposite of what I'm trying to do here. So now your child has a pacifier. Okay. How can we use it in a way that, makes sense for everyone, right? We're not going to have it at school. And when you're ready, I'll help you get rid of it. We're not going to say, oh, pacifier is bad for this, and reason, because most people already know why things aren't great for the child that they're doing. My child loves TV. She loves TV. I know that it's not great for her, right? So I'm trying to figure out the balance and having a schedule and limits and rules around it and not judging myself. So really relinquishing that judgment from families and being able to meet them where they are has been eye-opening and a gift, and has really changed my practice in the classroom of, how I am with the children too, and what are my expectations for the children, and that idea of wanting independence so badly for them, and wanting them to be confident, and wanting them to know the rules and limits of the class, and really focusing first though on that connection and collaboration before seeking that full independence. And I think that is, I would sometimes skip the connection and collaboration and go straight to independence. You can do it. I know you're capable of this, but maybe they're not on that day or in that moment. And so let's connect. I had a student the other day that was having a hard time keeping their hands to themselves, wanting to communicate physically. And I just went up to them and was like, can I give you a really big hug? And we just hugged for a while. And then they stood with me and we watched the class and I talked about what was happening. And it felt so good, instead of saying, like, stop hitting, you're hurting people, whatever the language is that sometimes comes out in those moments. It was so nice to have that, like, wisdom and peace of maybe you just need to connect. And they went on and did some beautiful work for the rest of the morning. So having moments like that feels really good, and I think is a testament to experience and being able to now recognize how hard it is to be a parent, and especially in the world that we live in right now. So that's changed my practice in a beautiful way. And sometimes I'm maybe a little more lax than I used to be. That, like if I had assistants that used to work for me years ago see me now, they'd probably be like, oh, interesting. That's allowed now. But it's also, I'm really trying to follow the child and think, they know best. They have not been tainted at this point in their lives as much as we have by some of the constructs that we've created under capitalism and colonialism and living, thinking we can only live one certain way. The children in my care show me that there's so many possible ways that we can live in harmony and in peace and in joy, and still in conflict, right? Because we're humans, we're still going to be in conflict. So yeah, I just went off on a little ramble there,
Oh
but
no, I love it. It's so interesting to hear your insights and kind of what's changed for you and what has remained the same.
yeah. I will say too, the thing that has remained really true, and something that, Dr. Montessori would say, that children deserve to live in an environment of beauty. And I feel so strongly about that, about the beauty that surrounds children. And beauty not meaning like beautiful things necessarily, but like just that life can be beautiful, that there's so much beauty to life, whether it's connections or food or conversation and languages or the plants that are around us, or just having a really beautiful environment. You can see behind me, but the listeners can't, that I'm in my classroom right now and it's beautiful in here. I enjoy it in here, and children deserve to be in spaces that are also beautiful and that, everyone enjoys. So there you go. One of the Montessori trainers, Cha-Cha, would say that was my commercial. She has commercial breaks when she's doing lectures where she'll like go off on a tangent. She's like, okay, now we're back to what we were talking about.
That's amazing. So you mentioned before that you really it wanted to work at a Montessori school where your child also went. So has Edie started Montessori school yet?
She has not. She starts this summer or late spring. She'll be joining it's called the Kanaoa community here on the island. Kanaoa is one of the plants of the island. So she will be just down the little like outdoor breezeway for me. And I am equal parts excited and terrified for her to start school. And I've been doing a lot of reflecting on like, why am I nervous? Why do I have this like anxiety about her starting school? And it's all about me, right? It's like, oh, I'm not in control anymore about like who she's around and her interactions with other children. And I think that's part of why I like the idea that I can work at the school that she's at, where I'm like, oh, I love the adults she's going to be with, and I love the children she's going to be with. And then I'm like, who's she going to be friends with? Do I like them? Do I like their parents? Like all the like dynamics that you see is interesting. And luckily, I mean, this community is so warm and welcoming and friendly and has been beautiful, not only to me, but to my family. They, because Edie's not in my class, but she's the same age as all of my students, they include her in birthday parties or birthday gifts. Like they like part of the culture of this community is giving like gift bags after, for birthdays. And so they always include her in
Oh.
those things, which has been really, really beautiful. So yeah, and then I think about her working with the materials, and I'm like, what are you going to gravitate towards? And just the thought process is a lot right now. And I had such a negative experience for school, so I feel that like I want you to love school, but she's also a kid who I could see like not wanting to go to school some days, and honoring that, and just all the newness that is going to come when she's in a community with, she spent her whole life with us, especially growing up in the times of COVID. And it's going to be really interesting. But also, like, we live in the safest community probably on planet Earth right now. And she's going to be down the hall from me, and my husband lives across the street. So it's pretty
That's
awesome
amazing.
that we are in a position where we can say goodbye to her and feel really good and confident about that. I think that's the other piece that comes up for me is like, wow, people just like drop their kids off and they don't know me. That's amazing. That would be hard for me to do. I mean, they know me a little bit, but over the years, I'm like, wow, how much trust has been bestowed upon me, thinking about, the trust that I am putting into the adults that are going to work with my child, and I know them. So it feels like such a gift to have too. I feel very, very grateful to be in the position that I'm in right now.
Yeah, that's so special. I think that's something that I underestimated as a new teacher, how difficult it was for parents to leave their children with us. And I'm not a parent, but now just being older, I can, I think intellectually at least, understand that in a different way.
Yes. I think there's some wisdom in age too, right? Like you start to really, your empathy evolves as you, well, you would hope one's empathy evolves. I can see your empathy evolving with this. And I think those times, it's not about whether you're a parent or not a parent. It's like putting yourself in someone else's shoes mentality, which I think when we can do that as teachers is great, because then we can support the parent and the child in those transitions.
I was thinking about a conversation I had with a friend recently who has a 15 or 16-month-old daughter, and they're looking at Montessori schools and they really want to find a Montessori school that's a good fit for them. But they toured a school. I think it was their second in interaction with the school, and both interactions left them feeling not really confident about the environment. And she was like, "But it's supposed to be the best Montessori school in our area." And I was like, "You know, I love Montessori. I am a Montessori evangelist, but none of that matters if you are not comfortable with the school. That's what matters, because if you are comfortable with the school, then your child will be comfortable with the school. If you feel like she's being taken care of, that's what matters. It she's going to learn to read and write and do math, like no matter where she is. So it doesn't really matter what materials are in the classroom. So I hope that I'm sure they'll find a good fit. I don't, it doesn't sound like it's going to be that school, but that's what I would always tell parents that, you know, the transition's going to be hard for everyone, but if you feel confident and comfortable that it's a good environment for them, then they're going to pick up on that and they're going to feel confident leaving you and beginning their school day.
Oh my gosh, 100%, 100%. I often will tell families the transitions are hardest on you. Try to keep it together when you're saying goodbye to them on that first day or that, 6 month, whenever it is, and turn around, and that's when the tears can come. That's when the like sadness of the passing of time, the excitement of them going to school, all of those feelings that are so valid for families, especially because a lot of times this is their first time dropping them off with another person, right? Their first time saying goodbye to them, their first experience with school. And a lot of people, I'm not alone with having not a great experience with school. So that can be coming up, right? Like there's so many emotions in those times. And I think that's why I love the way that the AMI 0 to 3 training really words their training program is that I'm an assistant to infancy being the first 3 years of life. And I am an assistant to not just the child, the family also. And I use family specifically, and especially in the culture that I'm li living in right now, but it's not just the parents that need support. It is the family. And it's not always parents that are raising the child. It's the family. And using that language intentionally feels it feels like it encompasses everything. And in the culture that I'm in right now, because Lanai is such a unique place in the world, everyone, and this is, Hawaii, not just the island that I live on. This is, Hawaii. This is also culturally in the Philippines and many areas around the world where everyone's an auntie or an uncle. And the first time that I got called auntie on the island, it like, okay, I'm assuming the responsibility, right? Like, I am responsible for the children of this island. Like my husband felt the same way the first time a child called him uncle. He was like, okay. He saw a
Oh.
kid playing at the he played he saw a kid playing at the playground. He was like, she's only like, I don't know, 5, 7. She was young, she's playing by herself. No one was there. And I was thinking to myself, like, what happens if she gets hurt? And I was like, that's when you assume the role of uncle and you take care of, like, that's just the way that this culture is that you have a feeling or a sense of responsibility for all the children, not just your child. And I really, really love that part of this, so that I feel like when families are starting in my class, one, it's a small community. There's only 3,000 people that live on this island, give or take. And but there's already a level of trust, I think, already like built in because of that just cultural auntie and uncle mentality, which I really love. I don't love that it's gendered, because that I often think of like my friends that don't identify with being an auntie or an uncle, and I'm like, oh, what would you be called, right? Like thinking about that, and like, what it when or if that situation arises. Because so far I've only met folks that are comfortable with auntie or uncle, but just remembering like that language piece too. It's like I love it, and I also find a challenge with it too in the gendered part. But the responsibility, the feeling responsible for the child is like, oh, I daydream a lot about like, what if every community was like this? It'd be so cool. We'd all be having
Yeah.
so much better of a time.
Yeah, it really seems like it's at least a little bit closer to raising a child with a whole village and having those other adults that are so important in every child's life.
Totally. We were at a birthday party last weekend or a couple weekends ago, and one of the parents, they needed to run home, and they were like, "You guys got him?" And we're like, "Yep, we got him." And he's like, "I'll be right back," you know, and just being able to like have that freedom and luxury to be like, "I'll be right back. I gotta run home." And everyone else is taking care of the child that, you know, whose parents needed to go do something. It was really cool to see. And not that that doesn't happen in other communities. I mean, I think that there are lots of created communities, and whether they're family or chosen family, that are creating that. It feels different here for me because it's a different environment too. You know, Colorado, everyone's in their cars, and there's not a lot of like, you know, there's not public transportation, so you're not in community that way. And it's, yeah, the way that community is built feels so neat here and so much easier.
Oh, it sounds amazing.
Yeah,
Yeah,
it
you're
is.
making me think, like, should I move to Hawaii?
Right?
Sounds so
Well, not
magical.
all of Hawaii is like this, though. Lanai is so unique to Hawaii. And part of my reservation of moving here is that, you know, Hawaii has, I think it's like less than 20% of the people that live on Hawaii are of Hawaiian descent. Like there's such a small number of Hawaiians that are able to live here, which, you know, for me, I was like, I don't, you know, I didn't think I would return to Hawaii ever. My husband and I went to Kauai for our honeymoon. And the only reason we did that was it was one of the few places where there was no Zika, because we were doing fertility treatments at the time. So there was like a list of no places. And then it was like Hawaii and maybe like, I think it was really just Hawaii for tropical places. So we went to Kauai for our honeymoon and we thought, okay, we're done. We're good with Hawaii. We're not going to come back. And then this job opened up, and coming to visit Lanai and see how different this community is. That could be like a whole nother podcast about how different this community is here. But coming and giving, and that being my reason for coming here, feels like it helped me make the choice of saying yes to living here, and yes to taking a place here, right? Like taking housing and taking up space on this island is that I'm coming to give. And we've heard lots of people around the islands that we've met say, you know, this island, and I've heard the same for all the islands in Hawaii, but this island specifically will either welcome you warmly or chew you up and spit you out. And we have been welcomed so warmly by like the life on this island, to like having spinner dolphins in the bay playing and jumping while we were deciding whether or not we wanted to say yes to this. And we're like, well, I think the spinner dolphins are inviting us, you know, to like whales showing up on and not showing up. There's so many whales right now, but seeing whales when we're celebrating like being 6 months here and having locals just say, like, I was at the beach the other day, and one of the locals, he's like, "So everyone treating you well?" It's like, we need teachers. We are so grateful you're here, and to be able to, you know, give as much as I'm receiving feels like an acceptable way to live on land that was stolen and then colonized and really taken from the Hawaiian people, who were such stewards of this land, no different than in the States, you know, and where I was in Colorado. So that's been an interesting piece of the puzzle for me here, as you know, the spiritual preparation of the teacher takes place outside of the classroom, is being mindful of who I am. And I'm very much a guest on this land, and I'm very grateful to be a guest on this land and to enjoy it and to also give and help provide for the community. So.
And speaking of the community, you had written to me and told me that you have a very language diverse group of students. So tell me a little
Yes.
bit about that. What is your student body like, or even the student body of the school, and what languages are you surrounded by in Lanai?
It is so cool. I was not prepared for how language you know, diverse the community would be. I knew, because there is a big Filipino culture here, Like I was already prepared for, and I can never say it right,
Tagalog.
Tagalog. Oh gosh, Tagalog. I always want to put like an O on the end. It's like I heard it one way, and now I'm like trying to retrain my brain. So in my class right now, I have a student who speaks only French at home. So mom and dad are from France. They're both French speaking. I have another student who mom and dad only speak Spanish at home. And then I have another student who is starting next week who has only heard Polish in his life. I mean, granted, they live on an English speaking island, but that's what their parents are speaking, so that's what they know the most of. And then you have families that are using kind of like the Hawaiian slang, like pidgin at home, so different words mean, where I'm like, when I first started, I had a student that was telling me pow. I'm like, what is she saying? Pow, and pow means done in Hawaiian. So, learning the different, like, you say she instead of he, and I like, which I actually love. I'm a big fan of she. Not the actual act of it, but no, I mean, it's healthy, it's good for your body. Anyway, it's been really cool to have students who are surrounded by so much language. And because of the community that's built in a classroom, the French speaking family is also friends with the Spanish speaking family, is also friends with, English speaking family. So you're hearing different languages all across the board too. It's not just the child's only hearing French at home. They're hearing Spanish here, but then they're also hearing this child speak Spanish to their parents. And the way it like weaves together, knowing that absorbent mind is absorbing it and taking it all in, is just so cool. And you're in training. My trainer would talk about how you can never give a child enough language, and they can learn as many languages as like you can think of pretty much during these early years of life, and they do it effortlessly. So to see, my French speaking student who's going through a language explosion right now, and we're hearing French words where I'm like, I have no idea what you're saying, to him speaking English words, to being able to respond, to me saying something in English and him responding in French, and or sometimes in English. And I love that, everything is we for yes, right? Like, it's just, I don't want that. I'm like, instead of like saying yes back to him, I'm like, all right, yeah, let's do it. Like, you want to go do some hand washing? We, all right, come on, to try not to like say, oh yes, you mean yes, right? Just to like go with it. But I've known how important and powerful language is throughout my career. It's one of my favorite parts of the classroom, is getting the child to, seeing the child go from nonverbal to verbal in front of my eyes. Most children, when they start, one and a half-ish, are not talking a lot. And then by the time they leave my class, they're talking and they're communicating. And maybe communicating with words and nonverbal, like the power of the eyebrows and lifting the eyes and the smile and the way that we look with our faces or how we use our hands. You see all of that emerge too. And seeing the children, like the student who only had French and came and joined me in this environment with all English speaking, and to see them find trust, to see them pick up on the language so effortlessly, especially the receptive part of it. I please go get your shoes, and for them to go get their shoes, is so powerful to watch as the brain makes sense of it all, and thinking how hard that would be for me to make sense of if, I was thrown into an environment. Or I think of my time when I was in Japan and having no idea of the language and not being able to make sense of it. And you see children being able to do that. Oh, that's the other language too. My assistant is from Tokyo, so she speaks only Japanese to her children. So another language to add to the mix. But yeah, that power of the absorbent mind, that ability to take on languages is so cool and such a gift and such a, you know, the families here have all been very excited to continue speaking their native language in their home. But I think in some communities, there's some like shame around it and has been, especially when we think about, again, colonization and, you know, only speaking English and how important it is for individuals to speak their native language with their child. And knowing and trusting that they will get English or whatever language they are surrounded by, they will get it in one way or another. But having language from the native speaker is just, it's the best thing we can give the child because that's how they learn, is just by listening to us and watching us.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's so cool. What a special community. It's making me think about this school in Hawaii. I don't remember what island it was that do you know the podcast Code Switch? It's an NPR podcast. They did an interview probably about 3 years ago where there was a school in Hawaii where it was a Hawaiian language immersion school, but they were also teaching the parents Hawaiian at night because it was like the grandparents' generation were the last ones that were fluent in Hawaiian. So all of these families had committed to speaking Hawaiian at home, but the parents had grown up speaking English. So they were learning Hawaiian at night and the children were learning Hawaiian at school. And I think at the time of the interview, I think they did have some graduating seniors. It was like kindergarten through 12th grade. So it was amazing.
Oh, I'm gonna have to go back and listen to it. I would love to, because that's one of that's been an interesting part of living here too, is learning how to say Hawaiian words is it's been a real challenge for me to pick up on how to say it correctly. I hear Hawaiian folks or local folks that it just rolls off their tongue. And for me, I feel some of that like internalized like English only speaking shame around pronouncing other languages, even beyond Hawaiian, but that's where, you know, Hawaiian words are so much part of, you know, like street names or places here. Like there's a place here where you don't want to call it by the English word. Like it's considered disrespectful to call it by the English word. So learning how to say the names of places has been a challenge for me that I knew would be there. And I'm trying to give myself grace of like, you know, my head goes like, you've been here 6 months, you should know how to say this. And then giving myself grace of like, you've been here 6 months. You are learning how to say this. So I recently enrolled or purchased a like online webinar from a Hawaiian man who helps you learn how to say and pronounce and like understand the vowels and all of that. So I'm eager. I just purchased that the other day. So I'm eager to kind of put some energy and effort into being able to speak Hawaiian names with respect and not do the like, you know, you say the first couple letters and then hope someone fills in the blank, which is nice. You know, I do that with children sometimes where I'm like, this is the, and like wait for them to fill it on. But I that's one of the things that feels important to me is learning some of the language here because I know that it's important and an act of respect. And there's similar here, there's an immersion program at the public school where the children are in Hawaiian language all day. And I wonder, you know, how that's impacting some of the families, especially the families that are Hawaiian and, you know, learning alongside your child and how powerful and cool that can be. And I was listening to a podcast here. It's called Keep It Aloha podcast. And they were talking about how there was a lot of shame in speaking Hawaiian and speaking it, you know, so places like, you know, we live on Lanai, there's the apostrophe in front of the I on the end. And for, you know, the English speakers, it's Lanai. and not Lanai'i. And so like learning those little like acts of just change to ensure that, it's the Hawaiian culture that's respected here has been an interesting element of language, something new for me, living outside of my Colorado bubble where everything made sense when I read it and I could for the most part pronounce everything and whatnot. So I guess in Colorado though, I was learning how to say some of the words that were coming in from the indigenous cultures where they're changing some of the things in Colorado. So I think we all have places where we can learn how to just work to say things correctly. When I first was coming, I was like, I need to make sure I say the children's names correctly. If I have children who are spelled, in ways that are new and unique to me, that I need to practice them and make sure that they're coming out of my mouth similar to the way that they come out of their parents' mouth, or I'm not making up a different name for them, or they're not going by a nickname because I can't say it, right? It's my responsibility to say the name and learn how to say that. So I have done well with that. I'm proud of myself in there, but I haven't had that many like super challenging names. Names. It's just, it's such a different, unique way of speaking in Hawaiian language. It's slower, and I tend to talk fast, and I have to like remind myself to like slow down.
And that's a great lesson in general. It does seem, I haven't been to Hawaii, but when I think of Hawaii, I do think of like a slower pace and more
Totally.
relaxed way of living. I mean, I live in New York City, so anything is more relaxed than my way of living,
That's true.
but
We're in very opposite places in the world.
yeah.
Fascinating to think about.
And yet Montessori is in both places, and isn't that amazing?
Yes. It really is. I love to, when I'm like in the morning work cycle, when I'm like in it and I'm giving lessons, and it's just like we're all kind of in that flow state. I like to think like, how many other teachers were in this state around the world, we're like, what are they doing right now? And now that I'm here, I'm not like in the same time frame. So I'm like, oh, some teachers are off for the day already. Like they've already done their work and they're on their time now. But it's just it there's like a connecting piece for me during those moments in the morning of like, oh my gosh, there's so many children in the world that are experiencing something similar right now. And there's adults in the world, or when it's chaos in the class and everything is a mess, and you're like, what is this? Is this Montessori? Which it is. I'm very, very adamant in the, Montessori is messy. It is not beautiful and perfect all the time. And nor does it need to be. But yeah, I lost my train of thought there. I was going off on another
Well,
commercial.
I was gonna say that that's such an important thing, I think, for teachers to keep in mind, because I do remember feeling very isolated often in my classroom, especially when I was a new lead guide and I was trying to guide the children and my assistant. And I was like, I need someone to tell me to do what to do right now, but thinking about other teachers also experiencing the same thing at the same time is a really nice way to kind of get outside of yourself and have that perspective.
Totally. Like, and you're in that moment where you don't know what to do. That there's so many other people that are having that same moment of like, I don't know what to do right now. Right? Like, I don't know how to help this child, or I don't know how to help my assistant, or I don't know how to help myself, or whatever it is. To have that connecting feeling of like, oh yeah, sometimes we're not going to know what to do. And that's totally okay. Like maybe the child will show us what we need to do. Maybe nothing is what we need to do, which I think is what Dr. Montessori would often
Often,
say, is
the
like,
answer, and it's so hard.
yes, I love there was a picture. I don't know if you follow Monty Story, where they post like old pictures from the archives. And there was a picture of a child on a desk, like I think building with like the brown stair or something like that. Like they were all fully, or not on a desk, on a table, fully on top of the table. And I was like, oh, I love seeing that because I have children that crawl on top of tables, right? It's not something that I'm doing wrong in my practice. It is a natural thing for the child to do. It's how we handle it that is the important thing, right? Instead of being like, ah, get off the table, it's unsafe, blah, we're yelling at them. Oh, I see you need to climb. Let's find somewhere safe for you to climb. If you want to work on that puzzle, here's where you can do that, but not going into that, like the punishment part of things. You know, when we don't know what to do, sometimes the best thing is to do nothing. And that can be really hard, especially as a new teacher when you're, you know, first a new teacher, a new assistant, right? Like if you've read about Montessori or heard about Montessori on social media, that it looks a certain way. Because that's the part of social media that we don't see is the children actually working with the materials. Like the videos that I've taken and shared over the years, and I don't share videos of children working anymore because it feels really uncomfortable to me at this point. I went from like having permission from families to share like videos of the child completely, like their whole body doing something, to having permission to share photos of their hands, you know, so like they're doing flower arranging, all you can see is their hands. So there's no identifying feature of them. And now I don't share anything. And I think that's sometimes the disservice in social media is that you see all these beautiful environments. And like, I need to take a video of my environment, you know, when the work cycle's done, things will look very different than they do in the pretty pictures that I may share on social media. And not, you know, having that ability to watch a full cycle of work, and a work cycle being, you know, this uninterrupted time for children to interact with the environment, to be guided in different ways throughout it as needed. So yeah, that following the child piece, that they can answer the question a lot of the times, that I feel like they know so much more than me, which makes my job so cool, because I'm like, I'm with all these like little brilliant beings that, you know, driven by this internal force, that have so much joy and so much, you know, just, I'm looking right above you is a picture of my students in my class right now. So I'm looking up at like each one of them, and I'm like, it's so cool that I get to spend my time with these little humans. It's and learn and listen and hear as their personalities come out, and they start to talk and they start to communicate and express how, you know, they see the world and what their feelings are about the world. It's so good. I love this work.
Everyone should be as lucky to have a teacher like you who loves their work so much. I mean, yeah.
It feels like a gift. And I know that I'm not alone. I know that there are so many other teachers that feel this way. And I also know and feel like I want people to understand that not every school is like this where I'm working right now. Not every school is like you were talking about with your friend that walked into a school and thought like, oh, this doesn't like feel right. That a lot of Montessori schools are like that. That Montessori isn't your the best thing that parents can do or families can do when they are seeking care for their child is go by their first gut instinct. If you have a choice, because some people don't have a choice. This is the only place for care, so this is the place that I need to put my child. But if you've got that, like, if you've got choices and you've got that gut instinct of like, this doesn't feel right, then it's probably not. And maybe the little, like, you know, in-home daycare down the street is the place for your child and family, right? Like Montessori is not the be-all, say-all, end-all of everything. There's a lot that factors into it beyond just the name of the environment. The way that I interpret Montessori was very different from the way that the woman who was in here before me that started the classroom interpreted Montessori. And that was a learning curve for myself and for my staff, where I'm very different. And yeah, that understanding that Montessori is interpreted in very different ways too, based on life experiences and my personal culture and all of those things. So there are so many ways to experience Montessori and so many ways to be in community. And it's cool because it looks different in each culture. And can look different and should look different in each culture, and also have some similarities. I observed in a toddler, or, you know, like a 1.5 to 3 year old environment in Tokyo, and the woman who was running the class had also been trained by Judy O'Ryan. She had been trained in Japan, I was trained in Denver, and it was so cool to watch her class because I knew everything the children were doing. You know, their flower arranging, and that children's in the bathroom, and this children's getting a 3 period lesson, and so cool to watch. And also, you know, the culture is different. The children didn't have to wear shoes, which was so cool to see. And you know, there are those different aspects of the environment because you're in a different culture, and then there are the similarities. And I think that's the other piece of Montessori that is, makes it so right for the family and the child when done intentionally and purposefully with the resources that teachers need to do it well, resources meaning the materials, but also time off for professional development, being paid a living wage, having health insurance. Like, I'm for the first time paid in a way where I feel valued, and that is making my time here so different than in places that I worked before, where I had the stress of how much money I was making and paying bills and that sort of thing. I'm still a teacher. I'm not living large, but I'm living enough to be comfortable. And that makes it so that I can teach in a way and show up in a way that feels different from other programs too. And I think that's a factor in some teachers who are truly great at what they do and they are not paid enough, or they don't have the time to prepare their environments or whatever it is. And so, like, my heart goes out to those teachers that feel stuck in a way of not wanting to give their full self, because why would you if you're making $27,000 a year and working 40 hours a week, you know? And that's the low end of what I did a poll on Instagram and, you know, asked what everyone made, and it was pretty bleak to see. So I feel like, yes, I have been great my whole career, but right now I'm feeling particularly just great in the work that I'm doing and the work that I want to continue to do, because I've only been here for 5 months, and we love it. So we're wanting to, you know, build and be part of the community, which also feels really cool.
I'll have to have you on in, about a year and hear about how
Yeah.
the
Love
changes and then Edie will be in school by then.
it. Yes. Oh, I would love that. I love the podcast recaps, to just see how things and people are doing, you know, as especially I feel like this is so new. Like, I just feel like I'm really planting seeds right now, you know, and maybe seeing a few little sprouts. But the school's also
You're
new
in your
too,
first
which is,
period of
yes,
of your experience there.
exactly. So it's nice to remember that too when I'm like, oh, there's so much I want to do. And I get like, you know, I put it on my shoulders, it gets heavy. Instead of thinking like, oh, there's so much I still get to do and still get to help implement or design or whatnot. And yeah, that's it feels really good. It feels really, really good.
Well, we have covered so much today. Is there anything else that we didn't cover that you wanted
Oh my
to
gosh,
talk
I don't even know. I
about?
don't even know. I just want to say that I love what you're doing. I love the like emphasis on multilingual Montessori, especially just, you know, having families now that are bilingual that are curious about how their child's going to learn and how important it is. And like coming, I only speak English. That's all, well, I say I speak English and toddler because I can understand. That's my second language. But I feel sad that I only speak English, and that my like capacity to learn other languages feels stifled. And I love that you're putting an emphasis on how, I don't want to use importance. I want to say like just how cool it is that kids can learn multiple languages and be able to speak in multiple languages, and just how important language in general is, you know, language and communication. So I
Yeah.
appreciate you and the
Oh,
work that you're
thank
doing.
you. Thanks for saying that. That's so sweet.
Yeah.
And thank you for coming on and sharing all of your experiences. I started this podcast because I love talking to people and I love hearing about people's experiences. So, yeah, thank you for being so generous with sharing everything.
Yeah, you're welcome. I like to joke that I started my Radical Beginnings Instagram page because my friends were sick of hearing me talk about Montessori on my like personal social media. So I started it so I could like put all my energy there. I'm like you, I love talking about it and I love being able to share space with, someone across almost on the other side of the world that is doing the same similar work that I am.
Well, thank you again for coming on the podcast. This was wonderful.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And I appreciate everyone that's listening in and enjoying learning a little bit from the two of us. So thank you so much. And we'll talk again soon.
Thank you again to Nicole for joining me on the podcast. You can follow Nicole on Instagram at Radical Beginnings. That's Radical spelled RADICLE. You can find me on Instagram at multilingual.montessori and on my website at multilingualmontessori.org. You can find links to everything in the episode description. Make sure you're subscribed to the Multilingual Montessori podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you're listening right now. And if you enjoyed this episode, please leave a rating and review on whatever app you're listening through. It helps more people find the show, and I really do read every single one. Another wonderful way to support the podcast is to share it with someone who you think would enjoy it as well. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.